Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 85 for Slam Fire Radio for the week of November 28th. The week? It's a whole week or a day?
For the week, yeah. For the today, week. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Today's November 28th, and I'm Ron Burgundy.
And I'm Owen.
And I'm Matthew, and here we are.
Yes, welcome.
Again. Huh?
Welcome.
Welcome. Well, I didn't hear what you said. Welcome. Yes. No, it's that time again. It's that time to waste an hour and a half of your time listening to us waste your time.
I'd like to begin this week by saying we're sorry.
And?
You'll learn nothing.
And? I'm just going to keep saying and see how many other things he can come up with.
No more and then.
And then?
Let's jump right into it, shall we, gentlemen?
Yes.
What did we do this week in guns? Who wants to go first? I know it says me, but when I try and follow the script, I get criticized. When I don't, I get criticized. What are we doing? Tell me what to do.
You're lead host, so I'm going to criticize you for not making a decision.
All right, I'm going first. Okay, so I went hunting last Sunday, and in the province of New Brunswick, that was our last Sunday hunting that we had for the season. So Muffin and I and some guy I never met before, we went and spent the day in Riley Brook again. We got some partridge, grouse. And by we, I mean Muffin, because I was stuck in the back and didn't want to bother getting out. So I think he shot three that day. We saw this time four deer, two does and two fawns, well, yearlings, you know, but you could tell they were this year's kids. We saw them by about 10:30 in the morning, thought we were going to have a promising day, saw nothing after that. You can really tell in this area the moose have completely taken over. There's five times more moose tracks than there are deer tracks, and deer will rub a tree, right? They'll make a rub on a tree. Well, moose will do the same thing. And my God, everywhere you look, moose rubs, moose rubs, moose rubs. And they are ripping the place up. So, but ironically enough, both times that I went with Jason, I didn't see any moose whatsoever. But at least this time we got to see some deer. So
that's cool. At least seeing something is nice.
Yeah, for sure. So, did a little bit of reloading this week. Still trying to get through it. I've got lots of 9mm major ammo to make, and my order from Budget Shooter Supply came in, so I got some 5.56 to load. Did some dry fire practice, and then I spent a lot of time this week playing with my 30-30, my Model 94.
Cool.
And I had it out. When's the last time I had it? Last time I fired that rifle was at the charity shoot that we had at the Rescue Gun Club the first time. So 2 years ago.
That's been a while.
Yeah. And I thought I had taken it home and ran a patch full of oil through the barrel just to, in case, in the new house here, I'm not sure what the humidity levels are like and the gun safe is in a closet and stuff. And I knew it wouldn't get used every day. So I wanted to, the outside of the gun is covered in oil. I take ballast all, put it on a rag, and I wipe down the wood, wipe down the oil, or wipe down the steel. Anyway, so I brought it out the other day, and I thought I'd run a patch through it just for fun, and the patch came out green. And I was like, uh-oh, I've never seen green come out of a barrel before, so I don't know what that was. And anyway, cleaned it all up and stuff. But what got me onto this was I watched the Magpul video on precision rifle. Thank you, RJ, for the recommendation on that. And I learned a little term or what, I'm not sure what to call it. But anyway, cold bore versus clean bore, or clean bore versus cold bore. And we hear about guys that, they take a cold bore shot and the point of impact is not the same as it was when they left the range previously. And the way the instructor in the video described it, he said a cold bore shot versus a clean bore shot will be different. A cold bore shot should be the same as the last time you were at the range. Are you guys familiar with this? Have you seen this video or
no? I haven't seen it, but I know the difference just through the my experience.
It was new, totally new to me. So the way he explained it, a cold bore shot, you know, you take your rifle out, you sight it in, you shoot it, and then you should put a patch through it to get the carbon out, because carbon is what pits your barrel, not anything else, not the copper that makes its way into the lands and grooves. It's leaving the carbon in the barrel that's, will in time cause pitting. So run a wet patch through it, take it home. Then when you take it back out again and fire it, that's considered a cold bore. Cold bore, because you haven't removed the copper. He said the copper impregnates the microscopic grooves in the lands and acts as a bearing. So if you take the gun home and completely clean it and put a copper solvent in it, remove all the carbon, remove all the copper, when you go out to the range, now you're going out with a clean bore, and that first shot will not be where your last shot was from your previous trip out. So I thought this was pretty interesting, and wanted to know if you guys were familiar with that concept, and if you do that, if you just take them home and put them away, or if you put a wet patch through them, or what's your little regime?
I've just put my rifle away. I haven't really worried about it a whole lot. I mean, I've got an Axis. It's not exactly a high-dollar gun, so I'm not terribly worried about it. It shoots well. It always has been. So, I may start. I didn't know that it was the carbon that will actually damage the bore, so I may start running a wet patch through it whenever I'm done with it. But as I've always understood it, the clean bore was exactly how I understood it. But I've also noticed with certain rifles, a cold bore shot will often not be where the gun will group when it warms up. And so knowing where your first shot is going to be, especially on a hunting rifle, is very important, knowing what your cold bore shot's going to be like.
Mm. So. And, well, his theory, Matthew, is that the cold bore will be the same as where the last point of aim, point of impact was. A clean bore will not.
Right. Oh, okay. Interesting. And that may be the difference. Maybe there is a bit of a fallacy there where people were confusing the two terms. And so
clean bore, yeah.
Yeah.
So he says if you leave the copper bearing, he calls it a bearing because it fills in the microscopic grooves in the rifling and creates a bearing surface for the next bullet to travel down, that's okay. But a clean bore is going to change. So
interesting.
Yeah. Now, you the comment about your Axis was, and in fairness, you haven't had your Axis for 10 years.
Nope.
Right? So you haven't really put a lot of ammo through it yet. You haven't had a chance to see if the barrel's deteriorating. And you say it's a cheap gun.
Yeah.
Well, I treat cheap guns with more care than I do high-end guns, because high-end guns are better quality, right? Like my
I understand,
barrel, yeah. you've got to take more care of a cheaper barrel than you do an expensive barrel.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, I never even considered that.
It's not the same quality, right?
So, yep.
So I got out the 30-30 and my Thompson Center Venture and played with them this week and oiled the barrels up because they're not getting used every day, and just wanted to make sure that there was a coat of oil inside that barrel. But then I thought, I better label them so that, in 6 months or 8 months when I grab that rifle to shoot it and forget that there's a coating of Ballistol in there, you don't want to put a bullet down there without cleaning that Ballistol out. So I just took a Post-it note and wrote on it and stuffed it down the muzzle, right? Yep. So
yeah, clean rifle before shooting.
Yeah. But have you guys ever picked up a muzzle or a rifle that had been sitting for months and put a patch through it and had the patch come out green?
Nope. I've never put a patch through. I don't think my rifles sit long enough for that to happen. I shoot them all quite often, but no, I've never had a patch come out green. I just never have.
Okay.
So, interesting. I think I might run patches through all my guns tonight just to see if any of them come out green, just to see.
I did it with oil, with Ballistol, and then I got thinking about it more, and I took the 30-30 downstairs tonight before the show and put Hoppies into it and then ran the brush through it and then wet patches. I didn't want to really put the brush to it because the rifle last time I had it out shot very accurately. So with that in mind, I didn't want to knock any of that quote-unquote copper bearing out of the rifling.
Yeah.
So,
no, you got to be careful with that because, you do want that bearing there so that you have the same point of impact each time. You don't want to screw that up.
Yeah. So, And then I designed one more stage for SummerSlam today, the transport stage. So
cool.
Yeah, it's coming along slowly, but anyway.
But so, surely.
Yeah. Owen, what about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, I haven't done a whole lot, but I did get to the range last Saturday in the cold, windy weather. I met there with, I don't know if we don't officially have friends of the show, but Mark Price, he's kind of a friend of the show.
Sure.
I would say so.
Yeah, he wanted to shoot his handgun, hadn't been out in a month or so, so I said, ah, come on up and we'll go. So we went out and...
Hold on a second. Matthew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Matthew, are you going to Owens on Saturday?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, Mark Price was looking for 9mm brass. I can bring 9mm brass to Filthies, and then you can take it from Filthies to Owen. And
oh,
Owen
yeah, do that. I can get that to Owen. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right. So Owen, the 9mm brass is for Mark Price.
So, Mark, if you don't get it, now you know that it was supposed to come to you. Unfortunately, Matthew took it home and kept it for himself. Oh, wait, no, that's me. No, Owen did that. Dang it.
All right, so he came up, and we just kind of played around with the handguns a bit and did a little bit of shooting, nothing real serious, but it was shooting with gloves on because it was so cold, which was kind of interesting. So it's always different. I find it very, very different to shoot with. I mean, they were thin gloves. They were just the Mechanics ones, but very different. For me, as far as just pulling a gun from holster, it just feels different. That even that little thin layer can really make a big difference in how you grip your gun and how that natural draw that you develop from dry firing inside a warm house changes all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun to kind of play around with that myself and play with my accuracy. We shot out to 25. He had never shot at 25 before, so we kind of pushed it out a little bit. He had a lot of issues with his grand power. He's got this frog lube in it, and it does not like cold weather.
Nope. So the issue is not the grand power. The issue is the frog lube.
Well, that's what I mean, yeah. But he can't seem to get the gun to go off every other round. His light primer strikes because I think it's in all around his firing pin and stuff. So, yeah, another knock against frog lube.
Frog lube horror story.
More I hear about it, the worse, less I would ever use it, I think, less I like it.
I'm just using it on my Dylan Press these days. I mean,
yeah. It smells good, though.
Yeah, so what?
Just saying.
This is a Slipstream house. A Slipstream or nothing.
Yeah. So, anyway, so I've got to get him some Slipstream at some point. If we meet up with him somewhere, somehow, then I'll have to get him some. But anyway, so we did that for a bit, and then we went... We went back to the 100 yards, and I said, well, I'm going to put a couple different brands of ammunition through the M305 for groups and just to see what I get out of it. So I put three different factory loads through it. I put 180 grain. I didn't have a great selection, and I tried to buy some 150 grain. 150 grain 308 Winchester is just like hen's teeth around Woodstock. Can't be found. But the 180 grain 308 Federal, this is a soft point Federal. See here, I've got my target here. Those are my cold shots. So I should have taken a couple extra shots with that, but I didn't. But I had probably an inch and a half group with those.
Can't kick on that out of a semi-automatic.
No, inch and a half is good.
Yep. Wait, at 100, right?
At 100.
Yeah, awesome.
I had some Remington, 180 grain Remington core locks, and that was just about, I mean, it was maybe just inch and three quarter, maybe 2 inches.
Right. So again, a little not bit bad for semi-auto.
Yep. It's kind of interesting. It's almost a perfect 5-point star that I shot. I didn't plan it that way. That's just how it worked out.
And this is with your optic, right? With the scope?
This is, yes. Yeah. And then I had 150 grain Hornady SST. So these are like the super performance match grade ammo that I was using these for hunting this fall. And I shot probably a 1-inch group with those.
That's insane. That's really good.
I had one flyer that on that group that I know was me. I pulled it. I could just tell when I did it. So I discounted that, but I had four shots on an inch. Two of the shots were right on top, like almost same hole. Like they're right on each other.
Looks like that's a load you want to develop then, something similar to that if you're handling.
So I definitely think that 150 is all matches up with what I've read on the internet as well, that these guns like 150 grain projectiles. So that's probably what I'm going to get, 150 grain, yeah, and try to load up a...
That's nuts, man. You're talking a $500 Chinese semi-automatic rifle.
Yep.
And you're getting that kind of accuracy. You can't spit on the M305 or the Norinco AR. You can't.
No, they're good ones. They're good examples of what Norinco can do. It's not all Norinco is that good, but some of them are, and those are the ones that are.
Well, yeah, because let's remember, Norinco doesn't make guns. Norinco distributes guns.
That's right.
So the factory that the M305 is made in is probably not the same factory that the 1911 is made in, and it sure is shoot not the same factory that the 780 Homeland Security made in.
You're right.
Yeah, so I think I can turn. I can think I can get there with some hand loads. Get this down to a sub MOA gun.
That'd be really cool.
You know, which really cool. And everything I've heard on the internet has basically said if you get an inch and a half out of these, you've got a good gun.
Yep.
But I'm already without
you're
even
already beyond that.
Yeah, really, really trying. Just factory ammunition.
You've got a great gun,
and you've done nothing to accurize it.
I put in the guide rod. I changed it to guide rod.
You did. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That apparently can help with accuracy, and I've changed the stock, which is supposed to help with accuracy and all those kinds of things. They all contribute a little bit, but that's it. Like I haven't done any major work to the gun.
Yeah, it's not like you've bedded it or blueprinted it or anything like that. Nope. You've just done some basic stuff that anybody could do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
And you're not running a $1,000 optic either.
No, I've got a $100 $99 optic.
Yeah. So.
I've got a Bushnell, regular old Bushnell 3x9 on there.
With a piece of brass shim in one of the rings or something.
Exactly. Yep.
Fantastic, man.
So I was really happy with that. It's not sighted. I don't know if it's moved, the zero is moved a little bit, or if I just didn't do it right last time. I've got to adjust that because it is shooting a little high left.
And your $99 optic, really?
I know. Imagine, eh? Yeah. So.
All right. Move it along.
Yep. Matthew.
Oh, all right then. That was quick. Move it along. All right, I'm done. Oh, I went to the range a few times. I've been filming a couple of videos that are now up on YouTube, so I had to go to the range to do some shooting. So you can go see my YouTube videos on that if you want to see what I was doing there. One of them was the pellets, shooting pellets with nail gun blanks and blowing up tannerite, because that was cool. And then the other one was a gauge mate, which is shooting
I'm
22
so
through
glad
a shotgun.
You've got a job. It's no more time for ridiculous videos.
They were fun to make, and I know. Anyway, Trevor does not like the idea of me shooting 22s out of a shotgun for whatever reason. I think if I was shooting 9mm or 357, he'd find it cool, but not 22. Nope. Anything 22.
No, it's not 20. No, never mind.
All right. It's what?
Go on.
I want to know.
It's not a question of shooting 22 out of a shotgun. It's a question of shooting anything out of a shotgun other than a shotgun shell. That's why you have other guns. I mean,
yeah, but it makes your gun a bit more versatile. It lets you do things with it that it wasn't necessarily designed to do, and that can be fun just in itself.
Upgrading a truck from a two-wheel drive to a four-wheel drive, that makes sense. It's still a truck. It should be four-wheel drive in the first place. Turning your shotgun into a 9mm, no.
All right. Well, then I had a spare one here, but I'm not going to give it to you now. I'll give it to somebody else.
That's fine.
No, I'm kidding, because I did have a spare one, but I already gave it away, so you're not getting it anyway.
I just would have given it to like Curtis or something, or pass it along. Pierre-Luc. I would have given it to Pierre-Luc.
Yeah, he would have enjoyed it. But anyway, I swapped the sights on my Marlin 70, the Papoose. It had the kind of a rounded notch with a ball front sight, and you kind of rested the ball in the notch, and I did not like that sight picture at all. I have a spare set of 795 sights, so I took the 70 sights off and put 795 sights on it, and what a much, much better picture, sight picture. I'm way more accurate with that sight picture than I was with the other one. You know, the radius is still the exact same, but it's just a different sight picture, and it's amazing what once you're used to one sight picture, how much better you do with it whenever you're forced to convert to something else, so... That was fun to do. This is why I did that. Because I had such a... I did not like the sight picture on it. I had a scope on the Papoose for a little while. But what I found was because the barrel is so thin and because it's I don't know, it's not very tight to the receiver, I guess, there's some flex there. I found that the first shot wasn't necessarily always where the crosshairs were, and Curtis's father's barn found that out the hard way last week when a crow.
Did you finally hit the broad side of a barn?
I did hit the broad. Actually, it was the narrow side of a barn, but I did end up hitting a barn. Yeah, there was a crow perched on the roof, and Curtis was like, "Shoot the crow!" I'm like, "Perfect." So I grabbed a gun and line. I was dead on. And popped it, and it hit 2 inches low and 2 inches to the right and hit the barn and did not hit the crow. The crow flew away, and I was, what the? So I shot it again at another similarly sized target and nailed it dead center. What in the world's going on? So I did a bit of experimentation, and it found out that if I leave the gun or jostle the gun at all, you know, the scope did not line up with where the bullets were hitting, and I think that's because the barrel was so flexible. It's a pencil-thin barrel. So I just went back to the sights that are mounted directly on the barrel, because then it doesn't matter if the barrel is flexed at all or not, because the sights are on the barrel, so it's always going to be point of aim. So,
but is the scope mounted to the receiver or the barrel?
The receiver.
Well, the barrel's going to flex, but it's going to come back to where it was before.
And it does. It comes back to where it was after the first shot. It seems to snap back after the first shot. The first shot is always off in an undetermined location every time. I did extensive testing with it. Sometimes it'd be high, sometimes it'd be low, sometimes it'd be right, sometimes it'd be left.
But just when another point for the 10-22 takedown, I guess, huh?
Quite possibly. If their barrels are on a bit more secure, then that absolutely go with that. If you want a takedown rifle, don't go with the papoose. Unless you don't want to put a scope on it. If you don't want to put a scope on it and just run iron sights, then the papoose is fine because the sights are mounted on the barrel. So that eliminates the problem altogether. So that was basically all I did. It was kind of fun figuring out what that problem was and then solving it and then fixing it. So that was sort of one of the things I did this week and had fun with it. And that was it.
Cool. All right. Let's move on to our main tool pick. All right, it's time for our main topic. And this week we've invited Philip Sear from Everyday Carry or EDC Canada Facebook page, blog, and podcast, and Leathersmith.
Leathercrafter.
Is that right?
Leathercrafter. Leathercrafter. Come on, Trevor, get it right.
As far as I'm concerned, that is right. That's what I call a leather crafter. They're a leathersmith.
Leathersmith. There you go. But his last name's Sear, not Smith.
There we go. Off the rails already. So, Philip, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Awesome. So, before we get started into all of your different internet adventures, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your firearms background, how you got into the whole firearms, leather, EDC movement type thing?
Firearms-wise, was my dad and my grandfather brought me to the range outside of Grand Falls, New Brunswick, when I was about, I'd say about 10, 11 years old. Fired their little air rifle.
Are you from here?
My parents are.
Your parents
Grand Falls,
from New Brunswick?
Grand Falls, Drummond
Grand
area.
Falls. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I am too. I live close to there.
And basically from there, it basically took. I just enjoyed the shooting sports ever since.
Oh. Awesome. So EDC check.
Uh-oh.
What do I have on me?
Yeah.
Go.
So obviously not a listener of Talking Lead, huh?
That's all right, though. What do you got? What do you got on right now?
My Manix 2, SOG Flash 1, my Leatherman Charge ALX. And my Smith & Wesson or Colt tactical pen I have.
Ooh, a tactical pen.
Yeah, glass breaker and all that. So it's more rescue type thing I carry it for.
Oh, I just thought it helped you draw guns better.
No.
Awesome. Clatchy, what do you got?
I am wearing my pajamas. So I have on my watch and my wedding ring, and that's about it. Well, besides my, you know, regular.
Yeah.
But beside me, I do have one of my Gerber knives. I just clicked it open, and I do have my flashlight, my Phoenix LD20.
That's a good little light too.
I love it. It's a great little light. And actually, if I stretch my arm back just a little bit, I can actually grab my Marlin 795. Although the ammunition's locked up in another room, I could club somebody with it. They'd just get angry with me. I wouldn't really hurt them, but I could hit them with it. But yeah, sorry. I'm ready for bed.
Nice.
Owen, you're up.
Oh, okay. In Let me see. In one pocket, I have a Kershaw knife. And in the other pocket, I have my Fennec LD20.
It's funny. I call it a Phoenix, and he calls it a Fennec. I'm not sure which way it is, but Felipe, I go with either. Can you tell us?
It goes either way to me, honestly.
Is it spelled Phoenix?
It's Fennec. I pronounce it Fennec myself. All right. Because it's the F, so.
Well, fine. Take Owen's side. Okay, I still think you're wrong. Actually, you probably aren't, but whatever. Carry on.
I also have an old Gerber knife in that pocket. I have tactical fingernail clippers. In the other pocket, I also have a spare cell phone battery.
Smart man.
And that's about it.
Cool. Well, the other thing
I have bullets sitting on the desk, but no guns.
What's that, Philip?
One thing that's right beside me is my EDC fixed blade winter carry knife. Is the Hest original. Very solid knife. Actually, I think the last show I did was a little review on it as well. So awesome. It's a good little knife. It's handy for you guys out the east. Perfect for you guys out in the coast there. Solid. Durable.
Cool.
Very cool. Cool. Like Matthew, I'm in my pajamas, and I still have my red line by Nebo.
What is it with you old guys getting ready to go to bed at 8 o'clock?
Yeah, I don't know. I fell asleep before last night's episode.
Before the show.
Yeah, I didn't know they had to call and wake me up. Yeah, so I got my red line flashlight, which was actually a prize I won off the Fate of Destiny channel on YouTube, and it's a YouTube prize night. I have my CRKT Drifter, which I won from Cigar Buff's channel, and my fully charged Android phone. I've got a 30-06 across my lap, but I'm not carrying that these exactly, but I am currently cleaning it. So anyway, Philip, so back to you've been into guns forever. You started off with an air rifle with your father and your grandfather in New Brunswick of all places.
Yeah.
Tell us about Everyday Canada Facebook page and how that's evolved into a couple other things, how that got started.
How EDC Canada got started, was looking for a Canadian-based everyday carry group on Facebook, and I could not find one that was worth my time. So I basically, I'm just going to start it, and that was almost 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago now, I guess. And it's a very slow start. The last year or so, like this past year, the membership has gone from, 30 to 162. So it's been a really good year for membership-wise. Then kind of me and Richard, as the two main admins for the group,
okay, tell us a little bit about Richard. Who is Richard?
Richard is basically my U.S. admin. He's my main U.S. guy for it. So he's my, sort of my, if I have questions for the U.S. stuff, I go to him. So kind of we work very well together on it. Get a little ebb and flow going every so often. And as you probably heard, on our admin chat on Facebook, we get pretty hairy, crazy, funny, entertaining. So we're all straight laced on the page, but the chat, it's no holds barred. Richard's drives a truck down the States in Tennessee to Alabama, I believe. It is, Monday to Friday. So it's one of the reasons why he's not always on the show. Mainly just do Saturdays. Or Sunday night we record or go live. So
how many shows do you guys have out now? You and Richard?
Just the two of us, just the one that was last night. It was kind of scheduled for middle of the week to do a release at middle of the week. We record it Saturday. So it kind of was a lot of rust, a lot of we know what we had to work on. It was just seeing, get a good flow, feel what's going on, how it's going to work.
Yeah, it takes a while to hit your stride. I mean, I've been doing action shooting radio now with a couple of three other guys for 30-some episodes, and some nights it still feels like we haven't found a rhythm yet. It just takes a while to develop that nice back and forth banter and rhythm. But you find your groove and you get into it. But it's very cool, and I think Matthew and Owen, you'll agree now, Bolivar can stop claiming that he's on the only international podcast.
Sure.
Yeah, well, you know how I'm always saying that it's not a Canadian show, and he says, right. Well, it's an international show. And
yeah.
So I'm just trying to stick to the Bulliver.
That's cool.
It.
No. Really,
you know. Go to it.
It's good.
Okay, very good. So finally we have a decent international podcast to listen to.
Finally, a decent one, as opposed to that one Bulliver's on. Now, the one Ken Kowalski does is awesome.
That's a good show.
But the one Bulliver does is just terrible. Have you listened to that thing? I'm kidding.
Only when Kowalski's on.
Yeah, we love you, Brian.
He's going to, we do, but he's probably still going to cut us. Well, speak for yourself. I love him every day.
Oh, well.
Sometimes twice.
And back to Philip. So, Philip, where can listeners find your podcast?
I every episode I do, cat podcast we do have, I post it on our Facebook page, let members know when it's coming on. I kind of knew Trevor's kind of doing the Fire Emblem, the episode I did last night, the live one. I kind of thought, well, I want Trevor's opinion on it. And so it's like, I'll just set a direct invite to Trevor and, for him to come on the show or just to listen to the show, see what he thought. And, I just turned my head and, turned my eyes over the side of the screen and Trevor popped up and said, okay, I'm going to put him on without question. So it's like,
it took me a little while though. I ended up, my computer crashed halfway through trying to call in the first time and it burned up like 5 minutes.
Yeah. I've noticed that. I was like, that one's going on and off. So, okay. It's probably Trevor having issues or something's going on with one of the listeners. So,
technical difficulties are always fun whenever you're doing shows. We know all about them. So, how about your blog? Where can people find that?
It's on WordPress. So, I'll send the information to Trevor so you guys do whatever you have to do for all the three different things. The podcast is on Blog Talk Radio. The blog is on WordPress and Facebook DDC main page.
Right.
Is on Facebook. We talk about just about anything, knife, firearm, whatever basically we feel like talking about, so to speak. Lately it's been more knife related. We do have one of our admins is a prolific knife collector. We figure he has 300-400 knives easily. So if there's information we need ask questions about a knife, he's our go-to person. But he's he's a good person. Our admin crew on the EDC page is amazing. We all get along. We all razz each other. So it's sort of like you guys.
Sounds very unprofessional.
Yeah.
That's behind the scenes. But no,
like on air, we're always like sober and straight laced.
Yes, absolutely. Never.
I'm drinking water.
Sure you are.
So, Philip, it sounds like the podcast is not necessarily going to be specifically focused on all things EDC. It's going to kind of cover a variety of topics, more like a general show.
It's going to cover mainly EDC topics, but it will cover laws, legal aspects of it in some areas.
Nice.
It'll cover the firearms aspect, firearms news. It'll cover how, just a little opinion wise, like my opinion of it, to basically describe, oh, here we go, this built C-42, for example, here's what I think of it, or I'm not the expert, or here's my thoughts, and as you found out last night, my knowledge level is like, okay, I'm just trying to sit back and like, okay, figure out what's going on, and listen to what you're saying too is actually I learned more from it in 5 minutes than reading anything on NFA or wherever. But Bill,
made it all up though. Sorry, I just I was making it up. No, I'm kidding. That's cool. Yeah,
very cool.
You'll find that you'll get way more immersed into the subject matter than you ever thought possible once you get into producing your own shows for sure.
Well, it's like right now my main issue is it's just me and Richard, but for us, we're always doing so much just doing our talk. I don't even pay attention to the side of the screen. I'm just me and Richard just talking back and forth, and we need somebody on our side to, let us know we have a call or we have somebody listening in that wants to be on the show. So, I mean, it's trying to figure that out, all the fine-tune everything, really. It's going to go nice and slowly for the first little while.
I wouldn't say you're going nice and slowly. You're jumping right in, like, head first into, we're doing live shows, we're taking call-ins, we're doing recorded shows.
We don't even do live shows anymore. Well, I guess we could, but we haven't for a while.
Yeah.
Well, my mindset is I always jump into everything. Go in head first, might as well just go for it. And if you crash and burn, so what?
Yeah.
You always try again. There's no such thing as failure in my mind. So you go until you succeed at it.
You know what Edison said when he was inventing the light bulb? He didn't fail 1,000 times. He figured out 1,000 ways not to make a light bulb.
Exactly. So there's always one more thing you can do. This type of mindset. So never give up. So eventually it'll click and it'll work. So
So the other thing that you're into, Philip, is you're a leather smith. I believe that's the correct term for it, which is awesome. I've seen some of your work on Facebook, in particular the work that you've done with the NFA logo. Where did all that come from, and what are your kind of like, is that a sideline career for you? How can people get your products? What kind of products do you have, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, right now, I was looking through the catalog for some other items I was looking for, and they had a few kits for a little journal kit, and it's like, okay, this looks interesting to do, and there's somebody, a special person I was looking to do something for, and I end up picking this kit up, and I carved it, tooled it, did all the finish work on it, and after that, it's like, okay, it just got to the point where it's like, it was comfortable, I enjoyed it, very relaxing, got to the point where I can do the NFA logo pretty much in a couple hours, for the no compromise logo. It's a little bit tricky. A couple areas are a little bit tricky. It's not going to be exact to the NFA patch, but it's close enough. As the one you saw I did for you, Trevor. It's a little bit larger. So I want to make it something that's highly visible and goes.
But I think, Philip, that gives it charm. If it looked like something that was cut on a CNC machine, it wouldn't have that nice rustic feel of leather. And I mean, that's what attracts people to leather products, is they have that handmade rustic feel to them.
Yeah, handmade's like a lot of the times, a lot of the store bought leather items, it's weird now. When I go through, let's say, any of the stores, and they have leather products, I'm kind of like, gee, that looks like crap.
That's made in China.
That's definitely a mass-produced item. I look at my stuff. I look up
here. Go ahead, Owen.
I was just gonna say when I was learning blacksmithing, here's what my instructor told me, because there's definitely a difference. Very similar to production leather work, factory made leather work, and handmade leather work. Same with metal. It's exactly the same thing. There's handmade metal work. And then there's something that someone with a metal bender somewhere cranked out. And he always said, you strive to make it, when you make something handmade, you strive to make it as perfect as possible, but it'll always look handmade and people will buy it, but you still strive to make it as perfect as possible.
Yep.
It's that mentality.
Yeah. The first person who is my mentor for leather work, he basically said first thing he told me was patience, 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 practice, practice, practice. Mm-hmm. Master the swivel knife. Master this couple of these tools. Then there you go. There's some items I've done. It's some days I get really on a roll, and I just do something that looks like it's almost factory made. The nice sheath I made, beginning of October. It's one such of those pieces. It was just, I kind of go and it looks like it was made by somebody who's been doing it for 30, 40 years. A couple of mistakes in it, but I like those little defects in the work, the tooling, stamping. It's a little bit, makes it appeal more. It's unique. Each handmade piece to me, I can make four of the same pieces, but they're not going to be identical. There's going to be some differences in each and every one. That's what is the, what draws me to working with leather. Every piece you do, it could be the same for five people who want the same exact item, but they're not all going to be the same. There'll be little differences. The leather's thicknesses, the hardness of the temp, the firmness of the leather when you're tooling, it affects it too. It all, everything comes into play. It's a bit more, it, honestly, leather is harder to work with than steel, in my experience. It's harder to cut times. It just does not want to cut very well some days. You have to keep your tools sharp and make sure you do everything. There's a certain process you follow, with leather. It's very tricky to do. If you just basically slow down, take your time. It could take you some days 40 hours to do a certain carving, 8x11 carving. Depends on how much details in the carving. The one I did for the NFA with the one I did on for the NFA, a few months ago, that one took me about 9-10 hours to do all the tooling on it. Doesn't seem like it's a lot, but when you have the background, the patch itself, like the no compromise, do all the background, all that, that takes a lot of time. That's about 6-7 hours right there, just the background, that those areas.
So what kind of products do you make? Like you're talking about making, you know, the pictures and stuff on the leather, but what sort of products do you put these logos and stuff on?
Wallets, holsters for pistols.
What kind of holsters do you make?
I do basically just for large, small, medium pistols. So I have two.
Okay, so not brand specific, just not brand, get a medium holster. Yep.
They're generic holsters.
Are these for like auto loaders or revolvers specifically? Or
I can get either
both?
Or. I can do for both.
Interesting.
Revolvers and the semis. I'm right now working on two for 1911s right now.
Oh, you lost me.
I personally.
That's about the right era.
I do like the 1911s personally, but that's just me. I'm a historical rifle.
We all can't be perfect. Don't worry about it. It's okay.
But I do like my European firearms as well. So,
what about 686 revolvers, something in that frame size?
Possible. I have to really look into that revolver to get the actual dimensions of it. But I know one of the holsters I'm doing right now is for a Kunin 1911.
Nice. I've played with one of those.
Those are pretty neat.
So this work on trying to figure out how I'm going to do the design the person wants on it.
It's not a 1911, by the way, but that's a story for another day.
Close enough.
Not with Trevor.
Trevor's not a 1911 person.
Either it is a 1911 or it isn't. 1911s are very
specific. He shoots 1911s, but he just refuses to admit that that's what they are.
I'm going
to
pistol whip you with a 2011, and then you'll see it's not a 1911.
Oh, now I can see up close. You're right. Ow, stop it.
Yeah.
Cool. So do you have an online store where people can go peruse your products?
Yes, I do.
Where can people find that?
It's actually PC Leathercraft, and it's on Etsy.com, so ESTY.com. Just one of those sites that I found and said, okay, I'm gonna try it out.
So the URL for people to find it would be?
You'll send it to me.
I'll send it to you guys. Yeah. Put the information. I can't really see right now. It's kind of difficult to see right now where I am. So, but yeah. We also do just about, if you could think of it, I could probably make it for you in leather. I
want
those.
The whip of Indiana Jones.
You want the whip from Indiana Jones. Of course. Everybody else I talk to says they want that. That they want
well,
that.
Well, my wife more than me, but that,
right,
whatever.
Yeah. No, we understand.
That's awkward.
That is awkward. Yeah, let's carry on.
A couple of the items that I'm looking to get into the rifle slings. Do some rifle slings.
What a coincidence. My 30-06 doesn't have a rifle sling.
Okay. I do basically the belts, EDC Canada belts, belt general for normal everyday carry. I'm developing one that's for more of a survival situation, that it has hidden stuff inside the belt. So, like a little fire starter type of deal. So you can get in, get your fire going if you're hunting or whatever, carry your stuff with you type of deal. And, a few other fun stuff. Keychains, key tags, journals, notebooks, covers. I do all sorts of different items.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, Richard, it was definitely interesting having you on and learning about all that the leather smithing stuff. But I think the thing that's got me the most excited is having another podcast out there for podcast consumers to get into. So tell us one more time where to find your podcast.
The EDC Canada podcast is on Blog Talk Radio. It's this EDC Canada is the show name. And we go from there. It's usually about once a week or twice a week we'll do a show, depending on what's going on in the world, the EDC world. There's new products coming out. I hear about it. I'll kind of do a little thing about it, try to dig up as much information as possible on it, and kind of get it out there.
Awesome. I know we definitely look forward to checking that out, and I'm sure our listeners will get over there, and hopefully our listeners will become your listeners and vice versa.
Exactly. If you want to come on the show again, let me know, Trevor. We'll get you on there as a expert in the firearms or three gun shooting, action shooting.
Anything you want to talk about, I will make up the answers to, I promise.
Sounds good to me, Trevor.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for being on with us this week, Philip. We appreciate your time.
It's not a problem there, Trevor. Have yourselves a good night, and thanks for having me on the show.
No worries. Thanks for having us. Or thanks for being here.
Nope.
All right, gentlemen, let's jump into some listener feedback, shall we?
Let's do it.
This first email comes to us from the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend. Gallon. We'll just call him Gallon.
Gallon.
As Gallon storyteller.
We should just call him really 2.2 liters is what we should call him.
We miss you, Gallon. So Gallon says, I'll take the first one.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, how you all been? Because, you know, no matter how bad I ruin this email, I won't blame it on him like some of the other hosts on this show.
Right.
I'll just accept it as he wrote it well and I read it poorly.
Right.
And I won't pick on comma use or any of that stuff.
Sure.
Because I value the listeners. I appreciate them for who and what they are. I'm just putting that out there. It's just a completely random thought. So Gallon 2.0 says, or 2 liter or whatever we're calling him. He says, hey guys, how y'all been?
Good. I've been good. Quick. Owen, how you been?
Fabulous.
He asked us. We have to answer him.
Did I stop you?
No, I'm just saying. Just explaining myself. Sorry.
Why do you feel the need to justify everything
do? Well, when your knife comes out, I get nervous. I'm sorry.
Just wanted to drop a quick note on episode 82 and 83. In 82, you guys mentioned the shooter was armed with a rifle, a shotgun, and a crossbow. And I will take responsibility for that, Gallon. It was me. I said he was armed with a crossbow. If I recall correctly, and my information is accurate, the crossbow started as an internet rumor, which was parroted.
Mm-hmm.
Perpetrated by local media, and in the first day or so of the shooting, there was no crossbow, only the M305 and the shotgun. Official rumor was a Mossberg Flex. Also, the other rumor of interest circulating is the shooter had a PAL, but it expired months previous. That's just a rumor, though. Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen anything official as to whether or not he had a PAL or not. I think it does matter, but I don't know.
It sort of matters. I mean, if he had had one and then it expired, and if he had had one and it hadn't expired, it doesn't matter. He still at one point had one, and it just goes to show that, you know, licensing, as good as it is for some aspects, it doesn't catch everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Before we move on, the crossbow, I thought in the photos that, and I was so sure of myself, Gallon, that I went and Googled the bastard this evening to find photos taken of him on that day where I thought I saw a crossbow. And you're right. The only thing he's carrying is the shotgun and the M305. There you have it. My apologies for perpetrating internet rumors. I guess I had read it and thought I saw it in a picture.
That's the thing. I mean, if you think you see it on a picture on the internet, it's got to be true. Anything on the internet is true, right? Just the simple fact that you mentioned it on this podcast, and this podcast on the internet, really makes it that much more confirmed.
That's the problem. You know, you got to be sure what you're saying. And it, you know, we covered reliability of witnesses and eyewitnesses in Mag 40, and there you go, right?
Well, it's proof. I mean, that's the whole thing. You can't trust. You can't even trust yourself half the time, and that's not a fault of anybody. It's just the way our brains work. It's the way it is.
Yeah. There's that famous. It's a training exercise where the class is sitting in there minding their own business, and they're given some make-believe assignment. Next thing you know, a shooter and a victim come running through the room, and the shooter takes a couple of shots at the victim, and he's shooting blanks, of course, and they run out of the room. And everybody, you know, the instructor yells, get down, and then when it's all over and done, the instructor says, okay, get up. That was an exercise. How many people, how many shots, what were they wearing? Write as many details as you can, right? And no two people have the same information on the sheet of paper.
Yeah, 30 seconds after it happened, let alone, you know, a couple of days.
No, immediately after it happened, yeah. Yep. So in episode, carrying on here, Gallen continues. He says, in episode 83, I really enjoyed Trevor's review of the Glock and the M&P. Very well done and was interesting and well presented. Thank you. Before I go, I got to ask how you guys have such rotten luck hunting partridge.
Well, that's because there are no partridge in this area.
That's right. That's why we can't shoot partridge, because we don't have any partridge.
There's none here.
Grouse, on the other hand.
Yeah.
Seriously, boys, hit the hawthorn bushes, and you'll have as many as you can carry home. I enclosed a few picks to encourage you, and in the single pick, she's alive in my hand. Definitely one of my favorite critters, and I find them very interesting. I crop most of my birds and keep a journal as to what I find in them, when I shot them, and the time of day. My partridge gun is a Savage 24/22/410 with Williams sights. Love it, but the local birds hate it. If you guys ever get to Albert County, maybe I'll show you some secret spots. Cheers, guys. Gallon 2 liter.
2.2 liter.
Whatever. Right. Matthew, you can take the next one from the
well.
Whale.
Before we do that, I want to talk about this grouse hunting.
Yeah, sorry, I thought we were done.
Yeah, no, it's all right. I have been doing what you recommended there, Jason, and hitting the hawthorn bushes every time I see them. I jump out of the truck and I go tramping through there and I look, and you know, I approach quietly, I'll approach noisily, I'll approach a bunch of different ways, and the population is down up in this part of the province, I think, and so it's hard to find them. Can't shoot what you can't see, I guess. And on top of that, I mean, that is an awesome gun to be using for hunting grouse. I love it. It's
Can I say that out loud?
You shut up, Trevor. You got the shotgun for when they're in the air and the 22 for when they're on the ground. I had one in 22 over 20 gauge, but foolishly I let it go. I need to find another one because it was a great gun. So shut up, Trevor.
He's right. I had one little honey hole in Beldoon, and the years that there were birds, you know, I mean, one year you got more rabbits, and the next year you got no rabbits and more birds, whatever.
Yep, it goes. They go in a cycle.
I find, yeah. Every time I would go to this spot with the hawthorn bushes, sure enough, the years that you would find partridge in other places, you would always find partridge there. And, I mean, they eat those little red berry things, right? So.
Jason, can you write back or even just send me a PM? I don't care. When do you go through your journal there, and what time of day is your most successful time of day? I'm just curious to see if I can kind of give myself that extra edge by going out at the time that you manage to get most of your birds, and maybe that's just when they're more active. So I'd be interested to hear that.
What do you guys find?
I have not really found a pattern myself yet.
Oh, really? I have.
Which is?
The end of the day.
Yeah.
The last hour of light. And in the morning when the sun comes out, they come out on the road, sun themselves on the road, warm up.
Right.
And then they're out again at the last hour.
Interesting. Yeah.
Those have always been my, you know, and I'm speaking from my most recent two hunting trips. The birds that we got both times that Muffin and I went, we shot birds on the way in and we shot birds on the way out.
Right.
We didn't see any throughout the day to speak of.
Yeah. They were all. Good to know. Yeah, I'll go out closer to sunset then and see if I can get something. Because you guys all know I'm not going out close to sunrise. That's just silly.
All right. Spencer?
Yes, this one from Spencer. He writes, from the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language, 4th edition, edition, SOP. And I'm going to skip down to where he bolded it. Noun, something yielded to placate or soothe. also a bribe. So this is coming from us reading his email last week or the week before, where he said a sentence with the word SOP in it, and we did not understand what he was saying. So we basically just said, you don't know how to write emails properly, and we carried on. He does know how to write. Yeah, we're hasty in our judgment of him. And for that, I apologize. Doesn't make it any less funny, but, you know, I will apologize. And what we're going to do is we're going to read that part of his email that we read before and could not make sense of. And we'll read it with that definition in mind, SOP being something yielded or to placate or to soothe. So he goes, lastly, and not about Trevor at all, did I hear you say last week that the administration pulled back on the updates being suggested for your firearms laws? I hope not, since that just reinforces the precedent that gun control groups need to be given a SOP whenever there is a tragedy involving firearms. In reality, the government should be moving forward based on the undisputable evidence that it did indeed take a good guy with a gun to stop a bad one.
So what a perfect now, use of the word.
Now that sentence makes way more sense. So thank you for pointing us to a dictionary, because I wouldn't have done it myself. So
clearly. And for the record, I wasn't on that show.
He wasn't. No, it wasn't. Yeah, Trevor wasn't there. So
yeah.
It's completely Owen's and my fault. But
and also,
blame.
Also for the record, it would appear that the firearms changes or whatever they want to call it is back on.
Yeah, well, it was never killed. It was
shelved, but now it's back up for debate.
Yeah, well, we talked about this on last night's show. Philip on EDC Canada. He was quite, I'll say fired up. He was annoyed. How's that? He was annoyed about, Bill 42 being shelved, and, thought there was a bit something fishy about the whole thing. And the point I made was, well, let's look back at the history of this. The announcement was supposed to take place on the day the three members were shot in Moncton. They simply postponed the announcement by 1 month because it would have been in bad taste as far as the Liberals and even non-liberals.
No, I mean, I have no problem with them postponing it, because I don't want to be pushing an agenda in the midst of tragedy. That's
right.
That's something
so
the other side
the
of
same,
the argument usually
yeah.
does, not us.
So we're in the same situation here, where, you know, they were about to table it in Parliament and start debating it, and we had a shooting in the Parliament building again. Yeah. You can't just bad taste. So yeah, shelled for what's it been, a month?
Yeah.
And here you go. We're getting back at it. This is going to go through. So I have no doubt in my mind. Just like I had no doubt in my mind they would come after the season 858. I have no doubt this is going to go through.
Cool. Well, thank you, Spencer, again for that email, and thank you for the definition because
English how because. She is spoke by Spencer the Whale. How about Owen take this next one from Sean?
All right, Sean says, hello, Slamfire hosts and Trevor.
is that like because Trevor already. Wasn't on last week, or is it because Trevor's also a host of another show?
Or not a host of this show? I don't understand. Sean hates me.
It's kind of like that one from John there about Owen.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Sorry for it.
We did clear up that it is Trevor that you are supposed to be making fun of. So in this case, he is doing it properly. So
Let the debacle continue on.
All right. He says, I've just gotten into listening to your show recently. I'm sorry. I was searching for a Canadian podcast to listen to on my way to work. Yours just happened to pop up on Google first, and I've been hooked since. Love the playful banter, horrible jokes. That means you, Matthew. And also, go ahead, say what you're going to say, and I'll restart.
I was going to say, is this thing not on mute, or is it on mute? He didn't say he was looking for a gun podcast either, just simply a Canadian podcast.
Right.
Yeah.
And ours just happened to pop up first.
Yeah, so
we're thankful that Google, in their infinite wisdom, allowed you to see our podcast first, because we know you weren't looking for us. You just were looking for any old thing.
Something Canadian.
I guess we'll do for now.
Even as, I guess as Maritimers, we qualify. More than the province to my left, anyway.
Right. Carry on, Owen. Sorry.
You done?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay.
Oh, I see why the hate. I see the hate coming up on the next paragraph.
Yes. Don't read ahead now. Love the playful banter, horrible jokes, that means you, Matthew, and also a nice mix of good information and gun talk. I noticed that in the current episode, that Matthew and Owen chose to talk about an SKS. I can only assume that is because Trevor was not present.
Basically, yes. Had Trevor been here, we never would have been able to get through it without him throwing up every 5 seconds.
That actually is a really good idea. We should talk about it more right now.
I will talk archery.
Archery isn't guns. SKS is our guns.
Of course, SKS is our bow. What does that mean?
Huh?
Owen has an SKS and a bow.
Yeah, it's true. It means he really hates you.
I don't shoot either one of them.
Well,
I'd love to at all. I'd love to hear how Owen's Magwell adapter experiment goes in the future. I recently sold my SKS. They are fun. Too bad you can't hit a thing with them. I will agree with that. Anyway, I want to buy a new 22 rifle and semi-auto. I know you guys have some experience with semi-22 rifles. What would you suggest? I'm really attracted to the Ruger 10-22 takedown, but I want something accurate. Not sure if the Ruger fits the bill at all. I have a Savage 64 right now. Accuracy is good, but I hate only having 10-round mags. From Sean in Saskatchewan. So, I think we should turn this over to the 22 expert. Trevor, what would you recommend here?
I was so hoping you would do that.
I've shot both the 10-22 and the Takedown 10-22, and I see no difference in accuracy.
What does that mean?
They're both inaccurate.
No, they're not inaccurate firearms. Matthew, the 10-22 I got from you was plenty accurate for a semi-auto. And you can go watch Matthew's video. And this is a great idea, actually, Sean. Go watch Matthew's video comparing the 795 to my 597 and his 795 to his 1022. And you'll see that accuracy, hands down, goes to the Marlin 795. However, not by leaps and bounds. The other rifles are certainly well within what could be considered, acceptable or even more than acceptable accuracy. Yep. The 795 is more accurate, no question. But it's not like miles above the other one. So you're not going to lose enough accuracy to bother, making that a determining factor. Choose the 10-22 or choose the semi-automatic 22 that you like best. And if you're leaning towards 10-22, you won't regret it.
Yeah, I'm with Trevor on that. I mean, look at each one. They all have different features. Look for the one that has the features that you're looking for. And then go for it. But those are the three that I'd recommend selecting from. It's the Ruger 10-22, the Marlin 795, or the Remington 795.
Remington 597.
Yeah.
But if I could get the heavy barrel, I've had bad experience with the other one, the one with the sights on it. I know they're some of the Remington 597s were garbage. There's no question. I had one, that I returned and took store credit in exchange. You couldn't hit anything with it. And it just happened to be the one that was not the heavy contoured barrel.
I think that was probably a lemon. You could probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. The issue with having 10 round mags only, that's not an issue with any of those three rifles. You can get 25 round mags for the Ruger, the Marlin, or the Remington.
30 in the case of the Remington, but I never load them past 25.
So there you go. I would recommend one of those three. There's nothing wrong with the Savage 64. Savage 64 is a very accurate, very well-made rifle. They work very well. But like you said, having only 10 round mags, that is a bit of a bummer sometimes. So, go watch my videos. I think I do a pretty comprehensive review on all three of the rifles. And so maybe that'll help you make up your mind.
I concur. You want to take Manny's, please?
Do I ever? Oh, no, not really. Oh, I remember this one now. All right. From Manny. Hello, all. Last week, you talked about the accuracy of an SKS rifle or supposed lack thereof.
What's next? Next week, everybody's going to write in about freaking 1911s?
I hope so. It's because we hardly ever talk about them. They're like, oh, finally, we can write in about SKSs because Trevor wasn't there once and kiboshed his SKS talk.
Look, as long as we don't get anything from Jason Philp this week and
about walnut plays. Shotguns.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
I hope we do. Just for you. All right. Let me just say that after spending my two bills on one over a year ago, I would have to say it was probably the best bang for my buck. I'm guessing that's $200, not $2,000. Also,
Yeah, that's kind of the going rate, I think.
All right, cool. Also, I believe that mine is actually quite accurate. Given that I have never bench rested it for groups or anything like that, I can still hit small green propane tanks out to 120 meters with just the iron sights. Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. You think that yours is really accurate, but you've never bench rested it to find out. So how can you tell? You've got to bench rest it to, and shoot it from sandbags in order to find out if it's actually accurate or not. Are you hitting those propane tanks in one shot, or are you hitting them in two or three shots?
Stop picking on Manny and finish his email.
No, look, when he gets to what he talks about me later on, I think I'm entitled to give him a little bit right now.
The listeners are always right, just like the customers.
I don't agree. Anyway, then again, I shot my friend's SKS and I couldn't hit a windshield from 20 meters. Seriously? Oh, okay. I believe that the accuracy is per rifle and shouldn't classify the platform. I understand that one might not want to, keep trying different ones until you find an accurate one, but I get decent accuracy out of my first one. This rifle is purely my sandpit gun. I don't think it has much use in combat situations, quote-unquote, or hunting. By the way, mine was an old Russian one that came originally with a firing pin spring from the factory. Maybe because it's, quote-unquote, original, it's better. So, maybe. And, you know, I've heard mixed reviews on SKSs. You know, some people say they're great, some people say they're garbage. Trevor, I believe, is one of the ones that say they're garbage. I'm not 100% sure on that. Trevor, have you ever expressed your opinion on SKSs before?
Sorry, what?
So yes, no, SKSs are, you know, it's a love hate, I guess, or indifferent, really. So
I honestly am indifferent.
It's a whole spectrum,
you know. I mean, so. I mil spec whatever.
I think they're a neat little gun, and if we did not have our caliber restrictions here in New Brunswick, I'd probably have one because it's an inexpensive caliber. It's a fine caliber. And it's an inexpensive, fun, rough use, throw around gun. So I'd have one in a heartbeat if we weren't limited to caliber restrictions here.
Really?
You would? I think so.
Yeah.
I would put a Tapco stock on it with a collapsible, you know, pistol grip stock and a collapsible butt stock there. And
there is a new one. I don't know if it's Tapco or ATI, but it really is AK-47-esque in appearance.
Yep.
Because they've molded the stock to meet the back of the dust cover.
Nice.
On the top of the receiver.
Yeah,
and it gives that line that looks like an AK, and it does make it look very nice.
Yeah. See, something like that would be nice. We actually had a listener, I can't remember his name, post on our Facebook wall some pictures of his SKS, and it looked really nice. He had a really nice mount. To mount a red dot that did not mount on the dust cover. So you could remove the dust cover, clean it, and put it back together without actually taking the optic off. And I think you could still see the sights underneath the mount. So it was a really nice setup. And I looked at that and I went, man, no caliber restrictions. I'd totally have that. But anyway. All right. So on another note, and this is where it goes downhill. Matthew, you know nothing of shotgun chokes and should never speak of them again. Matt, your garden hose example sucks.
I thought that too. I did.
In a garden hose, the pressure of the water hose makes the water want to leave the hose quicker if you put your thumb on it because of the differential pressure. I'm not going to explain differential pressure because this is a gun show, not a science show. And Matt, if you don't understand chokes, you won't understand differential pressure. The choke constricts the shot pattern and keeps it tighter for longer. It doesn't make your shot go further. The shot is still given the same force and moving the same velocity, whether choked or not. It just spreads faster.
Do you see why I replied on the show's Facebook wall and said, worst episode ever? Oh, God.
If you think your gun works like a garden hose, Matt, put your finger on the end of your shotgun and then tell me how that works for your pattern. Anyway, I think I've ruined Matt's credibility enough. Always enjoy listening to you guys. A for effort, Manny from Winnipeg.
Did he listen? Did he not listen to what I said?
I know, because Owen was very clear.
Yes, but it was so hard to focus on anything other than your. Yeah.
My what?
No. We're fine.
You're just gonna trail off there.
Yeah.
In Matt's defense, from my memory, and I could be wrong because I have the memory of a goldfish. I don't think Matt ever said it makes your shot go farther.
He did. He did.
Oh, indeed. He did?
Testify to that on a stack of Bibles.
Okay.
What I meant by that.
Oh, what you meant by that?
Hold on. I was wrong. I'm going to edit you out if you don't quit. Listen, I was wrong if I said that, and I'm pretty sure I probably did. But what I meant was, and remember, I was trying to explain this to people who had no idea how it worked.
Yes.
What I was trying to say was, Trevor, shut up for a second. What I was trying to say was, constricting, the choke constricts the pattern and allows you to shoot further effectively. So it doesn't mean the shot goes further, but it means that you can take targets that are further away because the shot is closer together. And I will have you know, on a well-known website by a highly prestigious choke manufacturer, they use the garden hose example. It's not to explain that the choke makes the shot go further. It's to explain in very simple terms that choking it allows you to shoot further. It doesn't mean the shot goes further. It allows you to take targets at a further distance because the shot is closer together.
So you and them are both wrong.
That's fine. Just if you want it.
No, I would agree with that.
All you have to do is say it reduces the inside diameter of your barrel, constricting
right.
the shot pattern.
Yeah, but what does that do? If you say those words to somebody, if you say those words to somebody and they have no idea, they're, you know, it's, if you learn in a way that you need an example, then I think the garden hose example is the perfect one because everybody understands you constrict a garden hose and it shoots further. It's a simple concept in that sense. We're not looking at the scientific principles and the physics behind how the shot chokes work. If Edith had wanted that, she would have asked for that. But she said, I have no idea how shots work, how chokes
work.
And
still doesn't after listening to you.
No, after these bow shows, I think she understands perfectly, or she better. No, Manny does explain it very well. The choke constricts the pattern. It keeps it tighter for longer, which allows you to shoot at targets that are further away. That's the best way to explain it. And my hat's off to Manny for wrapping it up in so few words.
And my hat's clearly off to you for not being wrong. You were able to twist it, manipulate it in such a way that you weren't wrong.
Well,
you were just different.
Look, I was confusing, and I'm sorry for that. I'll try to be less confusing in the future.
No, you won't.
No, I probably will. I'll try. But
I'll try,
I won't
but
be.
Not succeed.
That's right. I'm not going to succeed at it. But Manny, thank you for clearing that up. And I'm sorry I screwed it up so much. But, you know, I was just trying to be as helpful as I could without going into too much detail. Anyway, obviously that was wrong of me, and I won't do it again.
Okay, let's see if I can get through this one from Sharp 97. This is going to be painful. He says, hey, guys, how's it going? Love Matt with the coffee. I think you guys should do a lot more of, should do that a lot more often. I haven't laughed so hard while driving before. I know Trevor will be a problem with this, or will, I know Trevor will be a problem with this.
Yeah, Trevor's always a problem, Sharp.
Yeah, but maybe he'll help Chris's corner a little more. No, Chris doesn't have a corner. He's a host now. So, you do know you're running into slam fire and not action shooting, right, Sharp? Anyway.
Sometimes people get them confused. I mean, you do have a pretty big internet presence now.
Yeah. Two shows. I'm all over the place.
All over.
So
more
I was
ways
wondering.
Than one.
Oh, now he's calling me fat. That's.
I didn't mean that. I meant like you're like ADD is what I meant, but that's funny too. We'll go with that.
So he says.
Trevor just insulted himself. That's great.
So I was wondering. I currently have something like 9 tabs open on my browser on different guns I'm looking at. I'm currently looking at bolt and lever actions. So here is my question. What's the difference between the different – oh, and I was supposed to look this up. What's the difference between the different Savages? Well, their different models have different model numbers. There you go. You have Hog Hunter, Trophy Hunter, to name a couple, not to mention the Axis. So real quickly – features.
And, basically, yeah.
You know, some of them have, some are long action, some are short action, some have accu triggers, some do not, some have accu stocks, some do not.
And, some have bull barrels, some have sporter barrels, some have sights, some don't. You know, there's really too many features to list, and there's no way we could go through and explain
that
in any sort of detail.
The Savage website, Sharp, is very well laid out.
Uh-huh.
It took me about 5-10 minutes to figure out which was which because I was shopping for a Savage recently, and so I did the research on their website, and if I can navigate it, just saying. So, and another question: when choosing calibers, what should I be looking for? I'm looking to use my gun for long range target shooting, so I was thinking something like 308 or 223. I don't know much about using these calibers for long range shooting, but I was wondering. What are the availability of these other calibers, or what are the availability of these and other calibers, and these other calibers are, and should I maybe be looking at something else? No, for long range shooting, 308 is known
to
be accurate.
Yeah.
It's readily available.
That's the industry standard, really, is a 308. Yeah. 2-3 long range is 600 meters max. Absolute max.
Doable, but
you can shoot them further, but you might as well go with a 308 because you can get out to 1,000 yards with a 308 with, you know, some sort of semblance of accuracy for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure. If I was picking a rifle it's going to use for both hunting and long range, definitely be the 308. You'll get more done with it. What can you suggest for lever actions? I don't really hear much in terms of popular calibers for such guns, and I was thinking maybe 30-30 or 30.6. What can you guys suggest in terms of calibers for the not-so-common guns? I'm not sure what or even when I'm going to buy first, but I've been wondering these things for a while. Thanks for the show's Sharp 97. P.S. What are the dates for SummerSlam and the charity shoot? Charity shoot's June 20th. SummerSlam is August 22nd, 23rd, I believe. Hold on 1 second here. 22nd, 23rd is SummerSlam. Okay, 30-30 or 30.6 in lever action. The only calibers I'm aware of, well, in lever action, you've got pistol calibers. You can get a rifle chambered in 357 Magnum, 45 Long Colt, 44 Magnum, 30-30, and those are all Marlins and Winchesters. I recently picked up a Savage Model 99, which is in 300 Savage, which has almost the same ballistics as a 308. Not quite, but certainly a lot better ballistics than a 30-30. So those would be the two that I would consider.
Is that a box magazine one on your 99?
Oh, yeah. It's an internal rotary magazine, kind of the same idea as a 10-22.
Gotcha.
So you just feed them down through the top of the open receiver or the top of the open action.
Right.
It's not a tube underneath.
Yeah, and that's what you're going to find with tubed lever actions. You're going to be stuck with pistol calibers or the 30-30, basically, because they are more of a round nose caliber. The ones with pointed noses, you're not going to want to put in a tube where the point of the bullet is resting on the primer of the one in front of it.
Sort of kind of true.
But
remember, we have the lever
Lever Revolution.
Yeah, Lever Revolution, which is now a polymer tipped pointed bullet.
And
I'm going to bring up something else here that he may want to consider. If he's wanting something that's maybe with a little more punch than a 30-30, getting closer to the 30-06 side of things, not quite, 308 Marlin Express. Ever heard of it?
Nope.
No.
I'd never heard of it either. But it's based on a 207 Winchester, and it was designed to try and duplicate sort of a 308.
207 or 307?
307. It's based on the 307, but with the goal to duplicate the 308. And it's semi-rimmed, but it's designed, it's made by Hornady. It was developed just a few years ago, 2007, I think, for function in lever action rifles. So that might be something to consider as well. If you could find a lever action, I think Marlin makes some.
Yeah, if you're looking for a quality lever action, Marlin right now, I think makes among the best.
An older Marlin.
Yeah.
When Marlin was taken over by Remington, Marlins have just gone in the toilet, just like Remingtons have gone in the toilet.
Yeah. Browning makes a good lever action, and obviously Winchester does too. Most lever action guns are going to be fairly good quality. They're a bit harder to make than a bolt action or a semi-auto, so, you know, they tend to put a bit more time and care into them. They're definitely a classic gun. But, you know, do some research. Make sure that the one that you pick out is, you know, known for reliability and accuracy. So
yeah, I absolutely love mine. And like we talked about what I did this week in guns, I've been kind of mulling it all week. My question, Sharp, is why do you want a lever action? If it's just to add one to your collection, then for me, hands down, a pre-64 Winchester Model 30-30.
Yep.
Model 94 Winchester 30. Yeah. Pre-64.
Model, 94.
Pre-64. Model 94 in 30-30.
Right.
The pre-64s were made stateside, better quality, better fit and finish. They hold their value longer. Like, I've got a 72 special edition with case hardened receiver and scroll work and all fancy, and it's still not worth as much as a medium quality, or, you know, a gun that's in kind of mediocre shape. That's a pre-64. The pre-64s are worth more because they're just better quality.
Better. Yep.
So if you just want a 30-30, if you just want a lever action for the sake of having a lever action, pick up a Model 94-3030, pre-64 if you can find it. That would be my suggestion.
Yep. The other one you might want to look into, Henry. Henry makes good lever actions as well. They're a bit unorthodox in the sense that they're still using the 22 style tube fed, where you take the tube out, you drop in your rounds, then put the tube back in. But you know, Henry's
something to be said for that though.
Yeah, Henry's were among the first lever actions. I mean, they debuted back in the Civil War, so you know they know what they're doing. And I've had two Henry 22 lever actions, and they were the cat's meow. They were great little rifles. So Henry's another one to consider if you're looking for just a classic lever action.
Hmm. Cool. Matthew, I believe you're up.
Sure. Just a quick note before we move on to the next one.
Oh, that's right. There was some more stuff there.
Yeah, Sharp also shared his gun and gear wish list with us on our drive. Our Google Drive thing there, he sent a document over it. He's got over $17,000 worth of stuff on it. I added it up. So he doesn't have it all yet, but if he gets it all, he's going to be well stocked with some really great gear. You've got some really good selections on there, man. If you get all that, you're gonna have a really well laid out gun.
You're going to be broke is what you're going to be.
You're going to be a little bit broke. Yeah.
And possibly single if you're not already.
I noticed that one of the optics that you want is a Meprolite M21, and I've actually got one that I may be looking to get rid of soon. So if you want one that's only barely slightly used, you could, you know, send me an email and maybe we could work out a deal for that. But
did you even have it on for a week?
Not even a week. No. So I have a quick review video to do on it first before I get rid of it, but it is up for sale, or it will be soon. So Sharp, let me know if you're interested in that. All right, this next one comes to us from Uncle Biscuit. He goes, "Hey guys, I wonder if he's related to Uncle Cracker."
Probably.
Because, you know, biscuits and crackers, and it's got to be. All right, as hunting season comes to a close and I yet again failed to get my deer, I have begun to search for a new project to distract me from my shortcomings as a hunter. That's what I do every year.
Me too.
I feel the pain.
I think I have it narrowed down to an AR build, mostly because of two reasons. One, I don't have an AR, and two, everyone should have an AR. Those are great reasons. And yes, those are the only ones you need.
Uncle Biscuit for Prime Minister.
Yeah. Being a novice to ARs, I fired them and cleaned them, but never owned one. I'm a bit daunted by the amount of options available. Do you have any advice or pitfalls to avoid for a first timer on a semi-flexible budget, say $1,200 before optics? Thanks again for any advice, and thank you for the show. It's always entertaining. Uncle Biscuit, P.S. Loving the Turkish shotguns. Oh, and it's really my birthday, so happy birthday to Uncle Biscuit.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
NEA.
NEA is a good, yeah.
That's it.
I'd shop, you know, NEA is a good rifle. They're heavy, I find, anyway. They're a bit heavier than they need to be, but that just depends
on the front handguard, and they've lightened that.
Good.
No, it depends on the barrel. It's the barrel that's heavy, not the handguard, in my opinion.
Yeah, no matter what air build you're going to build, I think you want to go with a heavy contour barrel, but that's me.
Yeah. Well, if that's the case, NEA is perfect.
Yeah.
Because they have a lifetime warranty on their barrels.
Yeah, NEAs do make good guns. I'd look around though. There are some really good deals on ARs right now. Their prices of the ARs are sort of in a free fall almost. The market is flooded with them, and you know they have made way more than the market needed, and so prices are going down. So look around. If you want to spend $1,200 on one, you can get a really decent AR. You could probably get a really decent one for about $800 right now if you looked hard enough.
Yeah. Generally building costs more than buying a completed rifle. However, like Matthew said, with the market being flooded, we've seen SFRC put NEA lowers on sale for as low as $65. Mm-hmm. So if you're not in a hurry and you shop for sales, you will build it for less than you can buy it for.
Absolutely.
But you've got to be patient and look for sales.
That's true. I was just going to say, you get the added benefit of actually building your AR. It's not that hard. If I can do it, anyone can do it, because
if Carl from the Gun Dudes can do it.
Yeah, but he scratched his. Although that was...
Stan
scratched it. So just don't have any friends over named Stan, and they probably won't scratch your AR.
And I mean, I built three, and like Matthew said, I mean, if you can put Lego together, you can build an AR.
And it's fun. It's super fun to put it together. And if you order all your parts at different times, it's almost like Christmas all year round as the parts show up. It's like, ooh, the upper's here. Ooh, the bolt carrier's here. And you can put them together, and Yeah, it's neat. So I'd recommend building one just because of the sheer joy of it all. But if you're looking for one and you're not all that handy and you don't want to actually build one, then just buy one. You'll probably spend less on it. So maybe. You might spend less on it.
Yeah. Yeah, you might. But yeah, like it's six. It's not 6 to 1 having it together. If you build your own, you have the experience and the pleasure and the joy of building your own.
And the nice thing is, if you built it yourself, you know exactly how it works. And when it breaks, you know how to fix it because you built it.
And who to blame.
Yep. Yeah, that too.
So, yeah. Those are options there. You know, think about it. And, you know, I'd say build one.
Cool. All right. Ready to move on?
I guess so.
So we have no iTunes reviews this week. We know we don't have any because we didn't check.
I did actually check.
Oh, wait. It was funnier my way.
It was funnier away, but I did actually go and check.
All right.
But it would be cool if we got some more iTunes reviews.
Yeah, why do you hate us so much?
Yeah, listeners.
It's all
by the way, we were number one today on iTunes Canada, that is, in the outdoor part of the category of sports. Yeah, we were number one. It's the first time I've seen it in number one, I think.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You're right. I've seen this on the front page several times, but yep. I've never seen this, quote-unquote, number one.
Yeah, we were in the number one spot, which was really cool.
There must be a mistake.
There's got to be.
Yeah. So and we're number one, and we're not getting new reviews.
Yeah, come on, guys. Go send us a review.
So leave us a 5-star rating and a written review, and we will read it on the air, and we'll give it to the best reader, me, because we appreciate it.
That's right.
So Hooked on Phonics did not work for me. However, we're going to move into shoutouts anyway. And who has Amos here?
I did. Amos. He sent in Trevor's new desktop background.
Oh, yeah. That's Amos, you're mean, man. I looked at that website, or I looked at that email. So Amos sent in an email to the show, something for Trevor, and I click on it, and it's a link to Wanstalls. They're a dealer out in BC, and they're like, they've got a whole section dedicated to 1911s. Like,
and that's
ridiculous.
What he sent.
Okay, let's sign off on this thing. Shut her down, move on, get over it, et cetera, build a bridge. Be sure to join one or both of our National Firearms Associations. And by one or both, I mean join both the CSSA or the NFA, which reminds me, I've got my second notice that my NFA membership is done in 3 days. Got to get on that. Do what I do. My wife, part of my Christmas present every year, she renews my memberships in both the CSSA and the NFA and get the extra NFA insurance. So yeah. Did you know that some gun clubs, if they get their insurance through the NFA, when you join, if you're already an NFA member, they'll not have to charge you the full price because NFA will just say he's already covered, so don't send us the insurance for him.
That's cool.
Yeah. Also, be sure to check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. We've got our own little forum over there. And like us on Facebook, we're at 1,082 and counting. And if you're looking for other cool outdoor-themed shows, be sure to check us out on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network at renoviolaoutdoors.com. They've got lots of great stuff indoor for all things outdoors, a lot of fishing stuff and some gun stuff, us, of course. You can actually hear our show live on Fridays at 1 p.m. and 10 p.m. and Mondays at 1 a.m. because, you know, what else are you doing at 1 a.m. on a Monday except listening to us? And get over to the Crusader Podcast Network. It's an international podcast network because Brian Bolivar and Ken Kowalski share a show. And other than that, we're on there and a whole bunch of other great podcast pro-gun shows, so check them out. Until next time, everyone, I'd like you to stay classy. I'd like you to take somebody shooting. And if you women don't find you handy,
they should at least find you handsome.
Yeah.
Wait, it's the other way around. If they don't find you handsome, they should find you handy.
I'm dyslexic. Can you
keep
not
your stick on the
slack?
Ice, or keep your stick, keep your ice on the stick, maybe.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.